Well, good afternoon. I'm the uncle of Pastor Chappell, and I don't know why he necessarily likes me, maybe because I'm older. I don't know. But he often takes me out of my comfort zone, and I spend, as a farmer, I've spent hours and hours by myself on tractors with a thought life, and I'm seldom in front of a group of people, so this is always out of my comfort zone. But I'll tell you, one time I had some people talk me into running for public office, and here I'd spent over 30 years by myself without speaking, without talking to too many people, except in my church I would teach a Sunday school class, and I now teach the adult Sunday school class. But when I started running for that office, I had to stand before people that I really didn't know, and half the crowd didn't like me because they didn't like my stand as a Christian. And on my flyer, I put on there, America needs to turn back to God. And so I had some opposition. So I had my lovely wife sit to where I could see her face, and she would smile at me. So when I would speak, I would look at her and see her smile, and then I would be comforted. I'd try to stay away from the scowls. But the Lord blessed there, and I was encouraged to run by people that wanted Christian men to be in public office and make a difference. And so the Lord blessed there, and I won that term from an incumbent that was, he was really giving away a lot of our rights to regulation and fees that he was charging businessmen. And I ran for two terms, which that's all you can run in our county, but we were able to lower the fees. We were able to, you know, Colorado, of course, is the marijuana state. And when that crowd come into our county commissioners, I had convinced the other two commissioners that that shouldn't be in our county, and we voted not to allow it in our county. They couldn't raise it, and they couldn't distribute it. And I was getting the threatening calls at home, and but the Lord is blessed. People all through town would talk to me and thank me for standing up for what's right and what's to protect our children. You know, we need to look out for our children, not only in churches but in public ways as well. I wondered how I fit into this group today, because we have young men that are just starting in business. We have men that are in the middle of their careers, and I'm at the end of mine. I've spent 45 years as a farmer and learned a lot of occupations. I'm a welder. I'm a mechanic. I'm a fuel operator. Let me see, what else would I qualify? I even carry out the trash. The only boss I have is my wife. So it's pretty good. I farm in an area where it's pretty marginal. There's a continental divide that comes down through the United States, and everything east is great farm country and a lot of moisture from the Gulf of Mexico. On the west side, all the moisture has to come from Southern California down where Paul Chappell's church is, and then it crosses 500 miles of high desert, and then it gets to our farm area. And my farm's at about 7,000 foot elevation. We depend a lot on winter snow, and then it's important how we work the soil to preserve the moisture. When we plant our pinto beans the 1st of June, they can survive and grow well for almost 2 months. But when it comes the last part of July and August, if we don't get the thunder showers, we're in trouble. And we're kind of like the Aborigines in Australia. We watch the cloudbursts, and I hear they chase those to get their water. Well, if I could chase one and bring it in August, I would, because that's when the plants start to bloom and set on it. And if it doesn't happen, we can have a poor year. You know, before I get into how the Lord has blessed my farm, I thought about what I could convey to you that was important to me. And a lot of it was the influence of people in my life. And the biggest influence in my life, and it was before I was able to even know, was a missionary. And I love missionaries because I stand here today as a son of God because a missionary come out into rural America, and we were just a family that was, we were raising chickens and pigs and we had cattle, and we weren't even farming row crop other than corn and feed for our animals. And I can remember my dad saying, boy, he says, those county boys that are driving those graders are making $200 a month. Can you imagine? And that was back in that day. And we were still using horses with part of our farm work, and we cranked the tractors to start them. So you know how far, you know how old I am, I guess you might say. But anyway, this old missionary's name was Pop Kinney, and he came to our house, and we were not churched at all. I can remember we didn't have TV at the time. My dad would sit at the radio and listen to the news, and it was just after World War II, and I was born in 1944, so it was right in that air. And he come and invited us children to go to Vacation Bible School, and he was an American Sunday School Union missionary. And so my parents, you know, of course, probably to get me out of the house, they said, sure, you know. So we all went to a schoolhouse, and he held his Vacation Bible School there. And that's the beginnings of us understanding the stories of the Bible. And I can remember my dad having an interest, and but then we had neighbors that invited us to a Pentecostal church. And so we went to this Pentecostal church, and I can remember growing up the few years we were there and being terrified, because all they preached was the judgment of God and condemnation, and I was scared growing up as a young man. But as we grew up, my sister, one summer, they would always hold a Bible camp in the mountains, and the Rocky Mountains are there close and beautiful area. And so my older sister went to this Bible camp, and she got saved. And that was the beginning of the chapel progression, my oldest sister Arlene. And so she come home, and she was truly saved, and she got a hold of a Bible. And we, all us four kids in the family, my brother and I and my sister Arlene and Paula, we were in one room with two beds, and that's the way we were being raised. And by the way, we had the outdoor toilet, the path. But anyway, she started reading the Bible to us kids. And I can remember my mom getting a little jealous over the fact that she was the spiritual leader there and reading to us kids. And so I noticed my mom and dad starting to study. So then they changed churches. We started going to the First Baptist Church in Cortez, Colorado. And I can't remember much about that. I was pretty young. But I can remember my dad coming home and saying, you know, I was sure aggravated at that Sunday school teacher. They were in the passage about Nicodemus and being born again. And the teacher said, well, you all know what being born again means, and went right on. And my dad was, he was upset. He wanted to know. And he began to study the Bible on his own. And with a neighbor named Luther Shields, they studied the Bible, and they come across the salvation of Christ in Romans. And my dad's Bible was wore out to the point you could pull the pages out of Romans, because he had found salvation there. And they got saved on their own, those two men, and they started a church in a one-room school. And my sophomore year in high school, I was at that same summer camp, and I got convicted of my sin, and I finally understood that we had a Savior, and that He loved me, and that He died for me, and He was not my judge. He loved me to the point that He gave His life so that I could have life. And so I trusted Christ there in the, on a sawdust floor and an old bench at a summer camp. And so that was the beginning of my Christian life. And then I started inviting my friends to different events in our church. My mom was the Sunday school teacher, and I started bringing my friends into her class, and slowly my friends in school started getting saved. And we were all very into athletics. I mean, if there was a sport, we played it. And in the winter, I had an old teacher that would drive a bus to the ski area, and we skied, and we started racing, skiing, and we played basketball and baseball, and everybody played every sport, football. And so I was really driven in that way, and that was kind of my focus. But my dad was a strong influence in my life because he was a very godly man. That he studied and read his Bible, but he worked. I mean, we worked hard on that farm. We had a change after a few years from the ranching. I can remember him selling the cattle. He sold his favorite horse and cried. I can remember he cried about selling his favorite horse. And we moved to the dry lands, which was a few miles away. And in this dry area, it's about 7,000 feet, we started farming that area. And as kids, we hoed a lot of weeds in the summer. We'd plant those mile rows on that section of ground. And we'd spend probably two or three weeks out of the summer walking those mile rows and chopping weeds out. And we learned how to work. And I can remember my dad having me ride the front of his cultivator, and when he'd be cultivating the beans, there'd be weeds standing up, and I would jump off and run ahead, pull the weeds, jump back on while he was still going so he could cover the little weeds. And we'd do that all day for 2 weeks, just running, pulling weeds, and then I'd throw them off at the end so they wouldn't seed and come back the next year. But when I was a senior in high school, I was being pulled two ways. I had got into cross-country skiing by a teacher that had taken me to different events, and I had qualified for national events to a team from Colorado. And my senior year, I had won the national ski championship in cross-country skiing, Nordic. And so I had coaches from colleges sending me letters, and I had the coach that coached our team wanting me to go to a college where I could race and possibly go to the Olympics. But my dad said, I want you to go to Bible College. So I agreed with him and had no problem with it. I went to Pillsbury Baptist College in Minnesota. I don't know if any of you remember that back in the Stone Age. I don't think it's there now. And then I transferred out to the Bible Institute of Los Angeles. And we actually stayed at the Church of the Open Door in downtown Los Angeles for a while. And then the coaches found out that I went with a friend from the high school that I went to, and we went out there, and he found out that we played sports, and so he made sure we got transferred out to Anaheim, where the main campus was. And so that was a blessing, because they started paying part of our education for playing on their baseball team and soccer and all that. So that's how I went through that. But these people were such an influence. My mother as a Sunday school teacher, and all my friends getting saved. On our basketball team, I had four of my teammates that got saved. When we ran track in the spring, we had a mile relay, and all four of us were Christians. And I think that was part of the success we had in sports, was the fact that we honored God in a public school. There was no Christian school available in those days. So, and along with that, there was young ladies, of course, that liked the boys that were playing sports that got saved as well. And a friend of mine is in the ministry today with his wife that was saved in that group. You know, and then my dad turned into a church planner. He studied to the point that he wanted to share it. So he started preaching at actually bought a school that was abandoned in our area, and he started preaching there to a small group and developed a church, and it was called Areola Baptist Church. And then as it grew, he turned it over to a young pastor, and then he moved out on weekends. He would go out into Moab, Utah, which was a Mormon community, and he started a church there. And every weekend he would drive 2 hours out to preach, and then the 2 hours back. He put a lot of his own money into the building, and he packed the sheetrock and helped build that church. And it's still there today and thriving in a Mormon community. So But the real key here was my brother. He went to Bible college as well. He preached for many years in San Jose and built a great church there, and then got the call. A man by the name of Jack Baskin started talking to him, and he got the call to go to South Korea, and he was a missionary there for 4 years. And he raised the pastor we've been listening to, Pastor Paul Chappell, was his son. And he was named after my dad. And his brother, Stephen, is a great preacher today. He's in Oceanside, California. So from a missionary named Pop Kenny, out of that was a dryland bean farmer that studied his Bible, got saved. And his boys trusted Christ, and we've got three preachers from my brother, and my boys are attending church today, two of them in my hometown and one daughter that's still living there. But the Lord has blessed our family through the work of one missionary. And things that I think we've got just a little bit, I'll just tell you about some lessons that I've learned through those years, even though I'm at the point of retirement, and I'm glad for that after 45 years. But one lesson I've learned, that God is faithful. And in that dry area, when I first started farming, everything seemed really good. And I was young, and you know, through sports, I was thinking, man, I can conquer the world. And I would go out there, turn on the lights, I'd work 30 minutes before daylight and 30 minutes after dark and fuel up the next day, and I was just driven to be a success. And then all of a sudden, and through this all, we'd been taught to tithe, and of course, when you only get two paychecks a year, you want to do it on a monthly basis because missionaries depend on it. So we would determine the amount to give. Well, that worked fine until the droughts hit. And one year I had a drought, and we had given. And so the next year we thought, well, we'll borrow money to run on, you know, to plant and buy fuel, because we didn't make anything. So we just kept giving. And the next year we had another drought. So then I was paying tithes with borrowed money. And then the next year I thought, well, the Lord's good. We'll just tithe anyway. So we gave, and we had another drought. So then the bank started coming to me saying, you know, you have these payments on your machinery and land, and I know you've paid the interest so far, but what are you going to do this year? And I had a good banker, which was very fortunate to me, and a good friend, and he said, well, what we can do is refinance, and you can borrow enough money to pay the interest, and we'll be fine. So we refinanced, paid the interest, and I started getting headaches and back pain, you know, from the stress of all of it. That winter it set in. We had a good winter. We went out and planted in June. The rain started coming. We couldn't believe the rain that come. We went into our hay harvest. We were raising dryland hay. We had a triple crop. We filled every barn we had. We stacked hay out in the yard. When the bean crop come off, we normally made 400 or 500 pounds to the acre. We were making 1,000 to 1,200 pounds to the acre. The prices were up, and by the way, we paid everything off. And you know, through the years, I found after a drought or before a drought, God always gave me a good crop. And so I learned to trust God over the long haul. I didn't give up on it, and we just kept being faithful. So the lesson I've learned is, God is faithful, you be faithful, and be faithful to your church. And as mature men and women in your church, I know in our hometown we've had two young pastors. They've come in at about 24 years old with a young wife just graduating from West Coast Baptist College. And you know, it's real easy to just call them by their first name. And a lot of people would do that. But I tried to set the example. I call him pastor, because you need to respect the position of the pastor. He is the shepherd of your church. And so My wife and I set the example of just call it, we call him pastor, and we made a point to call him pastor in front of people that didn't call him that. And so we learned to respect that office. Another thing we learned was to be friends with people that just come in. And I'll tell you one example. About 3 years ago, a young lady come into our church, and she sat by herself, and I could tell that she didn't come with anybody, and apparently somebody had invited her. And so when church was over, I just made it a point to get her name. And if you notice, I write down names because that's the only way I can really remember them. But I wrote down her name and asked her what, you know, she did. And she worked at a national park, and she was working for a company, and she was single, and she had been invited by somebody to come to church. Well, she showed up the next Sunday, and I got the card out, and when I saw her, I called her by her name, and said I was glad she was here. And then I went to a young lady that was one of our teachers that was from West Coast Baptist College teaching in our school, and I said, there's a young lady here that needs a friend. And so the next Sunday she sat by the young girl, and again I called her by her name, shook her hand. The fourth Sunday she went forward and got saved. And then a Sunday or two later, she was baptized. And about a year after that, she came up to me, and she said, I'm moving. I'm going to Tucson, Arizona, to another park system. And she said, do you mind if I give you a hug? She said, you're the reason why I stayed in church and got saved. So a lesson I learned there was, look for those people that are new, befriend them, find out their name, call them by name, and they'll probably get saved. And be faithful in your attendance, and be faithful in your mission giving. And I'm sure you'd say amen to that. Yeah. Be faithful in your mission giving. We have a young couple here that we support that's in Thailand, and they come up and thank me for our faithfulness in giving to them. I tell you what, that's what keeps the gospel out there for missionaries. And as businessmen, you know, we may not be comfortable up in front talking to people, and maybe a Sunday school class is our calling, maybe a teaching. But if we can support these young people and people that have been on the mission field in a faithful way, God will bless you, and He'll take care of you. Because He's looking for people that He can channel money through, channel support through. And don't ever diminish yourself as thinking that you're less than a speaker or preacher. But we hold all those men in high esteem because that's the way the gospel goes out. We are part of the, and I always like, the Bible's got a lot of illustrations of planting and harvesting. And, you know, we're planted together with Christ in His death. And Christ says, I'm just the seed planted so I can produce more, and we're the result of His planting. But all those good examples are just examples of being part of that harvest. You may not be, you know, you may not be up speaking and calling for an invitation, but you're planting the seed when you befriend a person, when you invite a person to church, and when you give out the gospel personally to your co-workers and to your friends. So I guess today I would say, be faithful, honor your pastor, and stay involved, preach the gospel. You know, salvation is so great. You know, you think of those good verses, there is therefore now no condemnation. I mean, you could shout that from the housetops. There's no more condemnation. We're passed from death into life. You know, those were verses that my dad loved in Romans. I wrote down some other, therefore being justified by faith, we have peace with God. So when you really get a hold of what you have in Christ, there's no problem with honoring Him with what you make and what you do. We'll continue to be involved a little bit in the farm. We have I'll tell you another, one more lesson that I learned, and it's a very important one, and it's to love, to be careful not to love this world. And we had purchased a ranch to the east of us. And on this place, there was some canyons and some nice farm ground, but mainly some canyons and wooded areas. And my sons and I loved to go over there and hunt. And we used to go over there and hunt. It was a good family thing with me and the boys. So we started developing it. We had some elk that would come in, and they're about a 700 or 800 pound animal with huge horns. And in the fall, they go through a mating season, and they bugle, and hunters just love to go hunt them because they make all this noise, and they're on the fight, you know, and they just want to come. So we developed it, but I asked my dad before he passed away. I said, "How can we keep them here? Because they seem to leave, you know, after the winter." And he said, "You got to have water there the whole time, so because they water every day or every other day." So we developed water and started hauling water, and first we'd haul about 1,500 gallons a month, but then they started coming in more and more, and then it got down to 1,500 gallons a week. And we don't have a water table there, it's very dry climate, so we got this guy to come out, you know, the witchers, they get a stick and a fork and they'll go around, and he said, "Yeah, right here." So we have a guy come in and drill, and sure enough, we at 200 feet we hit 2 gallons a minute, which is pretty minimal. But I had talked to a solar guy, so I built a solar stand and put the panels in and did the wiring, put the pump down and flipped the switches, and sure enough, here we go. Through a water hose, it started pumping right into these tanks. And then a gentleman out of our church was quite an old guy with a cat. He come over and dug a big pond, like a lake area there. And so we had the water running in the tanks, and the excess would run into the pond. And then as the snow would melt, that filled up. With doing all this, my sons and I just kind of fell in love with that place because the game just come in. And we had our friends hunting there. We'd take Pastor Paul there, and we'd alternate with different preachers to come. And then during hard times, we would sell hunts. So during drought years, we could make extra money. The Lord gave us that. And we just got to where we wanted to be over there. We had an old cabin over there. And one day we come out of church on a Sunday morning and walk down the parking lot, and this place is about 60 miles away. And I look over, and it looks like an atomic bomb's going off. Just smoke and a big cloud. And I go to my truck, and I get my phone, and I call over to a neighbor, and he said, "Yeah, lightning struck to the north of you. It caught the southern Ute property on fire. It's coming down across yours." And so my two sons, my oldest and youngest and I, we loaded up and we drove over there on the Sunday afternoon, and we fought fire all night. And they had airplanes coming in the next morning and bombing, and it burnt up. Just burnt the trees up. And it just left the little wedge between the two canyons. And so we had booked hunters to come in that fall. We'd booked 8 of them. And so I told my oldest son, after we'd worked all night, we sat there, I still remember the tears, and he said, why would the Lord do this? You know, we've attended church, we've paid our tithes. And I said, "You know, sometimes you could fall in love with something of this world, and God just shows you it's temporary. And all of this we've got is just temporary. And He's the one that matters." And so we called our hunters and we said, "You know, we've been burnt out. All this traffic, you'll just have to, you know, we'll send you your deposits back." And all of them said, "No, we're coming." You know, they said, "We've come for years, and you guys have been so good. We're going to come." And you know, every one of them got their elk. Every one of them got their elk that fall. So I'll just leave you with that thought. Don't get too in love with what you've got here on this earth. It's only temporary. Only what counts is for God.